Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, 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 welcome to Playboys episode 12. With myself, the Dean, we've got Alex and not Dark Place Robert. You've transformed. You don't like being called that, I've heard, so we're just going to call you Robert.
Thank you very much. Anymore.
The artist is formerly known as Dark Place Robert.
Thanks. I was going to call you really Light Place Robert. I was going to do Light Place Robert, like Dark Jack in the Jack and Daxter games, and then he's Light Jack. And I thought you would appreciate the gaming reference, so I didn't do it.
Okay, I appreciate that you didn't do it.
So, guys, which play are we doing today?
Well, are we calling it by the original name or its current name?
I was just going to call it The Merchant of Venice. Do you want to fill us in on the name?
Oh, it was also known as The Jew of Venice.
There we go. Let's not call it that.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't. But
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, there's another story that's similar to it called The Jew of Malta. And so it's a similar type of feeling as that.
Okay, I think I've heard of The Jew of Malta. Is that, what's the guy's name? I can't remember the playwright.
Oh, I can look it up, but I do not actually remember off the top of my head.
Is it not the guy who did Tamburlaine and Marlowe?
It was Marlowe, yeah.
It's Marlowe, yeah. I thought it was Marlowe. Okay, so is this Shakespeare ripping off Marlowe or Marlowe ripping off Shakespeare? Do we know?
Well, they were written about the same time.
Okay. Well, I think they knew each other. You know, they were colleagues, so it could have been, you know, dual inspiration. It might not have been.
It looks like it was 8 years after Marlowe.
Eight years after.
But wasn't there also some talk that Marlowe had been to Venice, but Shakespeare had never been?
I have heard that.
But then it's one of these conspiracy theories you hear, and I don't know if I should believe it or not, but I'm also not interested enough to find out.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think it's fair to say that Shakespeare probably never went. Whether Marlowe did, I don't know, you know.
Hmm. What's interesting as well is Shakespeare himself, if he never left the country, probably never met any Jewish person in his life.
I think there's a fairly decent probability of that, actually.
Yeah. So what it was interesting, I was looking it up, Jews weren't even allowed to practice in England from 1290 up until the mid-1600s.
Wow. I didn't realize after it was so late. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the conditions were pretty terrible. And in Venice as well, they were basically forced to live in a ghetto. And instead of a gold star of David, they had to wear red hats. Wow. So you'll always see Shylock in a red hat.
Okay. So, So Shakespeare might not be the best authority for what he's writing about then. The Merchant of Venice.
I think we can all agree this is pretty anti-Semitic. I don't think there's any...
There. Yeah, that's the elephant in the room. I suppose we might as well address it early. And for anyone listening, we are aware of the anti-Semitic themes in the play. it gets pretty rough a few times, but we'll talk about Shylock later, because I think we might, you know, although we appreciate that there is anti-Semitism in the play, I do think we have different takes on Shylock.
What I want to discuss later.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. Before I go through like who's actually in the play, can we get like the one sentence kind of, did you like the play? I liked it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
There we go. And Robert?
I like the play. I like a lot of themes that happen throughout the play. I like the scenes with the doctor. I like the scenes with the three chests as well. Something about that is just very, I don't know. It resonates with myself, I guess.
scenes with the chess is very classic. It's almost like a fairy tale scene, you know, like I can imagine that being something that you would see in a fairy tale with the children's stories, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I suppose that's the simplicity behind it is just, it's quite nice.
Well, let's talk about who's in the play, shall we? So I think we'll mention him first, since we've already sort of talked about him, but we have Shylock. The description just says a Jew. So Shylock is a Jew. We know that rather stereotypically, he does some money lending. Okay. He has a friend, Tubal, who's, you know, we don't really see all that much, but we'll just mention him right now. And he also has a daughter, Jessica, and she has a suitor, Lorenzo. And they seem to be in love, but there's the kind of political and religious divide, I suppose. And Lorenzo's part of this little pack of lads, which is Graciano, Solanio, and Solerio, none of whom are really all that important, I wouldn't think. And then Antonio and Bassanio, who are the two kind of key players in that gang. Antonio is the Merchant of Venice. So he's the titular character, although you could argue he's not really... Like, I think Bassanio is probably more important to some of the plot elements at times.
I would definitely agree. Yeah, Bassanio definitely... I mean, he's the one who the comedy part is all about, right?
Yeah, yeah. So Bassanio is more key. Antonio kind of gets left out at the end, I would say, as well. But we'll get to that. We also have
We say Antonio is the Merchant of Venice. I think it can also be debated that Shylock is...
You could argue that. My Dramatis persona says it's Antonio, but at the same time, yeah, like Shylock, that description fits him too perfectly.
I mean, just going by the original title as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I think of it that way.
And that makes sense, I think, to be fair. We then have Princes of Aragon and Morocco, who really only appear in one scene as suitors to Lady Portia, and then the Duke of Venice, who's the usual Shakespearean duke that they kind of consult to wrap up things. So we mentioned Portia. She's a rich heiress. We have Nerissa, her wedding maid, and then, as I say, these princes go over to kind of be her suitors, and she's a few servants that aren't really that important, Stefano and Balthazar. And more or less, I think that's the entire cast, apart from... I've left out one or two: Leonardo, Bassanio's servant, not all that important, and the clown. So the clown is Lancelot Gobbo and his father, old Gobbo. And those are, you know, I always said the clowns could have been left out. I don't never really feel they add all that much to the plays. But
and this clown, Gobbo, is not too bright. Pun intended for the theater people out there. If you don't get it, a Gobbo is a metal piece used for lighting. Anyway. Right. Yeah, I'm not going to get into that too much. But yeah, I think that's everyone. Lancelot, he's the one who kind of progresses the story here and there. He's the messenger a lot of the time, but he is also a servant, but you don't really see him serve much.
No, he's not a great servant based on the amount of serving I see him do, which is almost nil.
Yeah. And he apparently gets someone pregnant later. That goes nowhere.
In a weird throwaway line. And that bit makes me sad because, well, apart from Shylock, you know, everybody else ends up with someone. They're all coupled off. And then Lancelot's not important, so they don't give him a scene of coupling off. They just mention, oh yeah, he got that girl pregnant. And poor Antonio, poor little single Antonio, is left all on his own. And I feel really sad.
I think
just mentally traumatized.
Antonio got to walk away with his life, so I think he's all right.
He's married to happiness and living. Yeah, that's his true love.
And he does get some cargo later, so he does make some money.
Yeah, he does. So I think he gets a happy ending. He does. It's just the others all, there's like three couples paired off, and then Antonio's just standing there like, well, what am I meant to do, guys?
One other interesting thing I came across was in the 1920s, someone wrote a sequel to this play, and in the sequel all the marriages are unhappy, everyone's unhappy except for Shylock's the only person who is doing well for himself because he's made even more money, and even more money because, well, I'm not going to spoil it yet, but some changes happen that people are going to be less likely to not work with him, I should say.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I mean, is that sequel something relatively contemporary, or is it something that was written, you know, more recently? Okay.
I'd have to take a look again. Who wrote it?
No, I was just curious if it was a modern thing or if, you know, it was like a contemporary of Shakespeare's who'd written it maybe a few years later or whatever. But no, it's relatively modern.
No, no.
Okay. That's curious because I never knew that. I'd actually like to potentially read that sometime.
So, I mean, it's from St. John Irvine? I don't know. Lady of Belmont.
Essentially, this just counts as fan fiction, though.
Yeah.
300 years later, I think it's fanfic, yeah.
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 Well, shall we get started? So we're set, obviously, in Venice and sometimes in Belmont, hence the Lady of Belmont, which is, I guess, Portia. First character we meet is Antonio, and...
He's sad.
He's sad. Yeah.
Do we know why he's sad?
Not really, no. At the beginning, he's doing all right. He's expecting a lot of money to come in from his ventures. He's nothing to worry about yet, but he's just sad because, you know, he's moody. I don't know.
All right, yeah. Because I didn't get it either. They ask him, and then they kind of just don't answer.
I mean, they eliminate all the reasons why he's not possibly sad. Not because he's in love or there's anything wrong.
Yeah.
They do, yeah. They rule out love, and then Solario says you're still not married. So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's just had depressing day. Like
we've all been there.
That's essentially it. He's just sad because he's not happy.
Yeah, and that happens.
Yeah, it's fair. It's just not explained, which is unusual, I think, in the play. But yeah, it is quite believable, you know. So he's in there talking with Solario. I always confuse these two, Solario and Solanio.
Yeah.
In my mind, are just interchangeable, you know, friend of Antonio. They could have just been called friend.
Honestly, yeah. I can see them just being twins or something. And
yeah, pretty much. We also then enter Bassanio, Lorenzo, and Graciano. So that is the whole gang. They're all together and they're having a wee chit chat, but then twins Solario and Solanio leave really once they arrive, to be honest. So we just kind of have a little shift in characters. But I suppose really the purpose of this first scene is to tell us that Antonio is sad and then to just introduce the gang. That's more or less what happens here.
Yeah, Bassanio starts the plot saying that he hears there's this woman, beautiful woman, who is needing to get married at some point, and he needs a lot of money to go see her.
Yes. Now, this is something that I find interesting, because Portia's already aware of Bassanio, so they've met before, and I wonder why he didn't try the casks. Yes. There is a scene where, so he mentions, and he gives the impression that he had met her before, I think, but then if you read later, Portia, there's a part where Nerissa asks Portia about the different men that they've met, and she mentions Bassanio by name as being one that she liked. And I don't know why he didn't try the casks back then. My only thinking is that perhaps her dad was still alive at that time and the casks weren't a thing yet, but they just liked each other. I don't know.
I think that makes more sense.
Yeah. So now he's coming as a suitor. And it's not explicitly mentioned, and in a sense, it's not important. But I was curious, like, well, they've already met, so didn't they get together then? But, you know, I've theorized that maybe the dad was still alive.
Yeah, potentially.
So guys, what's the plan here then? Antonio is going to help Bassanio, right?
Yes. Yeah. Bassanio needs 3,000 ducats. I don't know how to pronounce it.
I think ducats will do. Yeah, I'm not sure myself.
Ducats, sure. And Antonio... he's a merchant, so generally has a lot of money, but he doesn't have it in cash with him now.
So it's not liquid.
Exactly. So he needs to basically be a guarantor for Bassanio to get the 3,000 ducats. And that's where Shylock comes in later.
Yes.
It is, yeah. So that's essentially the first scene. And I think it's interesting that the others do all leave, and at the end of the scene, it's just Antonio and Bassanio. So I think by the end of the first scene, you realize, well, we've met a whole gang of lads here, but these two are the actual important ones. They're the ones advancing the plot at the end of the scene. So, and that's correct. The others are really not that important. We move to scene two. We totally shift. We're over in Belmont, and it's time to meet our other characters. We have Portia and her waiting maid, I guess, or kind of servant or her companion, Nerissa. Do you guys care about Nerissa? I find it really hard to kind of care about her.
I guess she gives Portia somebody to talk to. I mean, a lot of this would all just be a soliloquy if it wasn't for herself. And they are the two bitchy... they're not exactly the nicest people.
Really?
I mean, they go around, they're pointing at people, and then they're commenting about, you know, oh, look at this person. You know, I can't remember what the exact lines are, but they're making...
Yeah, I don't remember if it was this... Yeah, okay, I think it was this scene when Nerissa brings up all these people that
could
suit, and then Portia shuts all of them down, saying, oh, this one drinks, oh, this one...
Is a bore, yeah.
Is boring, yeah, something like that.
So
yeah, they're not exactly the best
people. I didn't think we were going to disagree this early in the scene. I thought Portia was supposed to be a kind of paragon of virtue at this point.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to, in a way. But when I was watching it, what was it, 2 years ago, I guess now, I actually thought Nerissa was an interesting character, but okay. I guess it was just the portrayal of her. They kind of had her and Portia be almost equal.
Right. Yeah. That would make it more interesting. Whereas, you know, just from reading it, I feel like, well, here's Portia. She's a character. And then, more or less, as Robert says, Nerissa is just something for her to talk to. You know, that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. But, like, even, like, Graziano is kind of a big side character. So, they end up getting married. Like, Nerissa does get quite a few lines throughout, I feel.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm being harsh on her. Compared to Portia, I didn't care about her all that much. But no, I think at this point, and I do take your point, Robert, but I really liked Portia because this is a girl who's not allowed to marry for love. She's there with her waiting maid. As far as I can tell, they do nothing. They're just kind of hanging around, spending their days with people coming to say, I want to marry you, doing the caskets, and then being so selfish that they can't solve a very, very easy task because they're so full of themselves. Just a bunch of, you know, old, lecherous, rich princes. And she's just annoyed with them by this stage. So I, you know, when she says, well, this guy's, you know, I don't like this guy and Palantine and all these other chaps and the French Lord and LeBron. I'm like, yeah, I guess you wouldn't, because they were all just a bunch of poncy, rich, selfish princes who didn't really love you. Like, so okay. I empathize with her, but, you know, it is a fair take. That's kind of how I saw it. And it's at the end of this scene where they mention Bassanio. So she did mention there that she had met him before.
All right. Fair enough. We might want to go into a little bit of what you mean by the three caskets. There's three different like boxes basically that you can choose from. And the test is choose the right one with her picture inside and then you get to marry her. And so far no one's chosen the right one. There's three of them. One's gold, one's silver, one's lead. Give you one chance to choose which one's the right one.
You're not allowed to tell anyone what you chose. Obviously that would help the next guy.
Yeah, of course. And it seems everyone's a man of their word. So they're not.
Yeah, not one of them. They're all just like, well, I have failed. I accept my failing and off I go.
Yeah.
Well, what do we think here? Like, this was a very, very easy task, right? Like, this is why I say it's almost fairy tale simple. Like, a child could understand this. Like, it's almost unbelievable that any of these princes could get it wrong.
Well, obviously, like, it's. Yeah, this is also 400 years ago, so we know this now, but at the time it might have been a little bit more challenging, I guess. Like, why wouldn't you choose the gold? Because, like, what does the gold say? I wrote them down. Who chooseth me shall
get obtain as, what all other
shall
men
get what
desire.
Any men desire. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, the logic for the guys are not that bad. Like, the last one, the lead one, says, who chooseth me must give and hazard all he hath.
Yeah, but I mean, you're looking for love, right? So the idea is that you're supposed to give all of yourself to Portia, which I understand. And I get that the very first person to try this might be thinking, oh, so gold I get all I want, silver I get all I deserve. It's got to be one of those two, right? But then, you know,
I don't deserve more than... like, this is what I deserve. to ask for more than I deserve is too much. Like, I thought that was actually interesting logic. We're skipping ahead to, like...
We are skipping a bit, but I think it's a very important thing to talk about, because for me, it's quite easy, because, you know, although they might not... They're using okay logic, you know, basic logic, but they know that other people have tried this before. You know, so even though they don't know what other people have chosen, they must be thinking, well, my instinct is to choose the gold. The last 300 people probably also thought that, you know? You'd think that maybe one of them would think, should I try the lead? Is this a trick?
Well, did all of them get to... Did all of them get to do this? Like, we don't hear about the others being able to choose from the boxes. We only have Morocco, Aragon, and Bassanio.
I mean, I'm assuming that they gave us that so we can see one person choosing each of the three. But I mean, maybe I'm adding detail that's not there. I just assumed that her life consisted of her sitting around with multiple guys just coming around opening these boxes every couple of days, you know?
It very well could be, yeah.
I mean, I just wanted to point out, we don't know how many other suitors it did actually show up. And the other part of it is maybe, you know, each suitor walked away being too embarrassed to say they got it wrong, saying like, oh, I didn't choose. You know, there was no casket, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's possible. That's possible. And she has a bit of freedom here, right? So she's not allowed to help you, but she does say to Bassanio at one point, why don't you hang around for a month or two and get to know me before you make the choice? A, because she wants his company, and B, because, well, maybe that, although she can't tell him the answer, maybe spending time with her will kind of help his thinking, I guess, you know? But that is skipping ahead quite a bit. So let's stick to where we are. We're going to wrap up Act 1. Scene 3 is where we meet our other main character, Shylock.
Yep.
First words he speaks, 3,000 ducats. So, like, he's all about... He's a guy who's obsessed with money. It's all he talks about. Now, at this point, they're asking to borrow off him. It's, you know, he's not just talking about it for no reason, but I just think it's interesting that his first line is to state money. So, he's talking to Bassanio. Go ahead.
Yeah, is anybody else really uncomfortable talking about this topic?
A little bit.
Yeah. So I would disagree. I wouldn't say he's completely obsessed with me. He's actually quite a deep character in the play. He's surprisingly deep for such an anti-Semitic play.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, no. He makes me sympathize with him a lot at times. Yes. And I think that there's certain likable aspects to his character. But I think on the surface level... Well, you know, he's almost more interested in money than his daughter at one point, and I think that is the way he's portrayed. So I just think it's interesting that
she also does steal from him, betray him, and like run away with some random guy. Like,
I mean, she does, yeah. So I wonder about,
so she's not in the right either here.
No, but what do we think Shakespeare's intention was? Like, are we meant to like Shylock? Or
no, I don't think. He wrote it in a sympathizing way at all, but I think we can read into it in a sympathetic way. And if we can make Shylock sympathetic, that will, I think, balance out the play. So it's not just good versus bad and conniving. And that's what I want to kind of push for today, is to have Shylock be someone that you can sympathize with.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a way to produce this play and make Shylock a good, you know, a good, likable, sympathetic character. Definitely.
Yeah. And honestly, I think Antonio is the bad guy through a lot of this.
Yeah, he is. He's an ass.
Yeah. So, I mean, Shylock's also not in the right morally, but we'll kind of get into legally how he could be. But yeah. I
mean, he still tried to murder somebody.
That's where he loses me, to be honest. That's where he loses
okay,
me.
Okay, we can get into it now if you'd like.
No. We'll come to it in the end. Before the close.
So we'll get to it in a minute. So what happens in scene 3 is essentially Bassanio talks to Shylock on Antonio's behalf, and then Antonio enters, and I don't know why they enter staggered. Like, Antonio's waiting at the door to be like, hey, you go talk to him first, see how he feels, and then I'll come in, you know. But Antonio then comes in.
They don't get along at all, probably.
Because Antonio has been very mean to Shylock.
Shylock also has not been nice to Antonio. Like, some of the reasons given, like, Shylock doesn't like him because he's Christian. He doesn't give any interest with his loans, which hurts him because interest rates go down. And also because he's very anti-Semitic. So, I mean, one of those kind of sticks out.
Yeah, look, with the loans thing, my interpretation was that Antonio wasn't a formal money lender, but he was just like, you know, he's got a bit of money, he's lending it to his friends and whatever, but he's obviously not charging interest. You know, like, if I needed to lend you some money in an emergency, I wouldn't charge you interest. That's kind of how I thought Antonio was doing it. But Shylock is kind of like, well, if you'd come to me, I would have made profit on that, you know?
Mm. But I mean, there's also like word versus action. So they can say these things, but they don't, I mean, the way things are done, like, people are just cruel to Shylock throughout this. And we'll get into the scene a bit later, but yeah, the reason people give, I don't know if that's actually the reason they dislike the person. Like, because Antonio will say something later that, oh, it's because of money. And then Shylock gives a completely different reason.
I mean, I'm under no...
Like, why he does something.
I'm under no illusions here. They dislike him because he's a Jew, right? That's the reason. You know, they can say that it's other things, and that's what... He dislikes them, I think, primarily because they dislike him and are mean to him. Hmm. I mean, that's the basic level.
Like, one of these here... So, fair sir, you sped on me on Wednesday last. You spurned me such a day. Another time you called me dog. And for these courtesies, I'll lend you thus much monies? Now, I just looked it up. So, 3,000 ducats is about $300,000.
Wow.
So it's quite a bit of money as well to ask for someone from someone who you are openly racist towards or prejudiced towards. Sorry. Well, I don't know. One of those two. Not going to get into that.
Yeah. I mean, Antonio feels safe here because he says, I want 3 months because I know that within 2 months, my ships are going to come in and I'm going to get thrice times three the value of this. So he's expecting like 9 times the value that he's borrowing to be back within 2/3 the allotted time. So he thinks he's very safe. You know, he's got an extra month to play with. Maybe some of the money doesn't come in. He's still going to have enough. He thinks it's almost impossible that he's not going to be able to pay back Shylock. And yeah. Shylock agrees to the bond, but they say, well, because it's so easy for you, you know, the forfeit is just going to be this pint of flesh, basically. Yep. And the impression here is that it's like, obviously, I'm not going to take that. What would I want with a pint of your flesh? We've got to put something... Let's put something silly, like, because I'm not going to take your heist. I'm not going to take anything that matters. I'm doing you a favor here.
Yeah.
Do we think that at this stage, Shylock wants the pound of flesh, or is he being genuine by saying it's just a nonsense thing to put down?
I mean, pretty soon after, he talks about it a bit more, so I feel like he's a bit more serious. It's just... I don't know. Like... To not charge interest as well and say, like, all right, we're just going to do a pound of flesh sounds a little strange.
It is still strange, no matter how you look at it.
What's interesting to me is Shakespeare kind of changed the ending, I feel. So in this scene, Shylock says, okay, I'll choose a pound of flesh from wherever I will it. Right. And then later on in the play, it says it has to be from the chest. Like, no, you could choose to just, like, take a hand.
Yeah, the bit about it being close to the heart seems to get added in. They just sneak it in sort of through the back door later on. Like, it's not really clear why that's the place.
Yeah, I mean, he just wants to kill him. But I also have a loophole for him if he wants. Just put a tourniquet around the guy's wrist. A hand weighs a pound. So go ahead and take your pound of flesh that way. It works perfectly.
Except that they could not take more than a pound, a hair's breadth, wasn't it?
Yeah, you can take more. 1.0 pounds, you know, it's got to be.
Yeah, yeah. But then I hate that they say later on, and we'll kind of get into it, but you can't take less. Why?
That makes
no
sense.
You just try it many times until you get a pound.
Take half a pound, then cut a bit more. Yeah, there's no reason you couldn't. It doesn't say anywhere in the bond it's got to be done in one cut.
Yeah.
Also, so there's no
just
reason
kind of
why
making
he can't,
things up later on.
There's no reason why he couldn't point at it and say, well, this is mine, but I'm going to leave it here. I mean, essentially, you could just write down, you know,
that's my pound of flesh.
That's my pound of flesh. I'm going to tattoo this and have awful things tattooed on Antonio.
Yeah, there you go. Because, like, it didn't say you had to cut it out. It's just you owe me a pound of flesh.
And so, Robert, I want you to write a play where they just write funny things on Antonio. And then he goes around and everyone's like, why have you got this written on, you know, on your
the
face?
Advertisements of Venice.
Just on his forehead or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or right, like, you know, beat me or something on his forehead, and then like some people will come up and beat him up or something. Like, that's a way to torture him forever.
I would have written on his forehead, "Need alone, come to Shylock."
Yeah, he's a human business card.
Yeah. Well, the thing is as well, like, so, I mean, we're skipping ahead a lot, but Portia ends up being the lawyer for this. She's never trained. She knows nothing about this. She apparently talked to her, like, cousin for who knows, a couple maybe. Hours. there's obviously flaws in her logic. Sorry, what was that?
There's so much to be said about that scene. We'll come to that.
We'll have to get into it later.
Let's get to it in due course, because we've covered Act 1, but we've also covered the whole play somehow. So let's reel back a little bit. Act 2 is weird. It's like, it's a very long act with a lot of scenes. Some of them are short, don't get me wrong, but we're talking 9 scenes in this act?
Yeah.
And I think this act does really a lot of the heavy lifting at this stage. So scene 1... is Morocco, right? So this is where we find out about the gold cask. So we have mentioned this, so I think we can kind of skip it here, but it's Morocco coming in, and he wants to try his hand at getting Portia, and well, that's really it. It's only a 45-line act, so it just introduces Morocco essentially as the first suitor. Scene 2, We meet the client. So that's Lancelot. Initial impressions? I just was like, another client. Like, I just don't like them.
They're for a particular audience. It's there.
Yeah. I mean, there's some funny things, I guess. He's just another clown. I mean, he at least progresses the
story.
Later
he does, yeah.
But yeah, I can't say I ever cared about him.
And this first scene is weird. Like, he's there, his dad's there, his dad's blind. His dad obviously doesn't recognize that it's him. Somehow he can't figure out his voice or whatever. And he just tricks him. And he's like, you know, asking like where the master's house is. And he starts talking about his son. And Lancelot pretends, obviously, that he's not his son. At one point, he then says that, you know, I heard actually your son has died. And then he immediately says, I am your son. It's all good. Like, why are you torturing your poor blind father?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't understand his intentions through a lot of this. Like, what bad things did Shylock do to him while he was working for him to want to leave and go work for Bassanio? Because it sounds like, from what Shylock's saying, like, he gave him, like, even as a servant, like, gave him a lot, like, lots of good food, like, place to sleep. Like,
yeah,
he could have just been absolutely cruel, but he seems to have been really nice.
They talk about the house being hell, like Lancelot and Portia, but we just don't get to see that, really. I don't know. Like, we don't see anything bad happening in their household, really.
Yeah, we see, like, Shylock calling for Jessica, and in between calling for her, he says to Lancelot, like, you could be eating like a pig here. Like, why do you want to leave? To this guy who has no money.
Yeah, sorry, Jessica, I said Portia by mistake there. Yeah, we see Lancelot and Jessica later talking about it. And I'm like, well, I didn't think that this household was bad. We didn't see any of that, but we took their word for it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. But again, I feel like it's just anti-Semitism some more.
I think so, to be honest, yeah. So enter Bassanio, and he's talking to them. And I guess this is the moment where, you know, Lancelot meets Bassanio and decides that he would like to... kind of go along with him instead of the Jew, right? That's essentially what's happening here.
Yeah.
And we see Graciano a little bit, so maybe we get a little early hint that he's going to be, you know, something of a character compared to some of the other chaps like Solario and things, but...
Yeah, he's the party guy. That's all we really know about him.
And scene 3 is only 20 lines, so we just see Jessica and Lancelot talking, and... Jessica basically says, this is where you're running away. Well, okay, have a ducat and, you know, all the best. This place is hell. You know, get ye gone.
And she also says, basically, like, she wants to, or she loves Lorenzo. And so it seems that Lancelot's kind of going to be that intermediary.
He's going to do a bit of messenger. Yeah, a little bit of note passing in class. Yeah, he's going to pass the note to, you know, inform Lorenzo. So... Lorenzo and Jessica both love each other, I think, and we start to realize that from here out. Based on the original description, just in the dramatis persona, I wasn't clear. I thought maybe he liked Jessica if he couldn't have her or whatever. No, Jessica is totally game for this. They're both in love with each other.
Yeah. She's like, I'll be Christian for you. Like, yeah, just come steal me away in the middle of the night. I'll dress up like a boy. And that's it. And that's 2-4.
So we see she's supposed to be, I don't like this, but she's supposed to be better than Shylock, right? And she wants to, you know, convert to Christianity. So that is slightly difficult, but there we go.
Can you see why this play was sometimes used in Nazi Germany for...
I can, yeah.
Propaganda? Yeah.
So the next scene is also very brief. It's only about 30 or 40 lines. Scene 4, we're in Venice still. Graciano, Lorenzo, Solario, and Solano. This scene doesn't really do in much. They're just having their wee chat, and then Lancelot comes in, and I guess this is where he kind of passes the note, right? This is where he informs Lorenzo that, you know, Jessica's wanting to go off with him. Scene 5, we're back with Shylock, and... Lancelot and Jessica. So I guess Lancelot's also going to run away. Like, he doesn't say to Shylock, I'm leaving or I'm quitting or whatever. He's just planning on kind of slipping out. And he tactfully manages to inform Jessica, you know, that Lorenzo's up for it. And they kind of say it in plain hearing of Shylock, but disguise what they're saying a little bit, and he doesn't catch on.
Yeah. And Shylock's actually kind of okay with Lancelot leaving. Kind of complains about him a bit, saying, man, this guy's slow. Like,
yeah.
Probably mentally and physically.
He's meant to be mean, I guess, Shylock, to an extent, you know. And that's the only hint of his meanness that we see towards Jessica or Lancelot, actually. But then there's this bit where Jessica says, farewell, and if my fortune be not crossed, I have a father, you a daughter lost. So I like that. That's a nice little poetic line. And some of these scenes do end with couplets like that. But these are quite short scenes. That one's only about 50 lines. You know, we're just rattling through scenes quite quickly here. So moving on to scene 6. Again, these are all short scenes. This one's only about 60 lines. And we have some of the extras, Solario and Chaps with Graciano and Lorenzo. And the idea here is that they're meeting up. They're going to some kind of masked ball, I guess. And that's more or less it. At this point, Jessica comes in dressed as a boy. Did she need to dress? I always ask this in Shakespeare's Question. Did she need to dress like a boy? I always feel like they could have gotten away with not doing it.
Well, they never had any female actors back in the day, did they?
No.
They
no.
were all young. Yeah. So essentially, maybe it was just a line where the actor asked Shakespeare, can I just dress as myself? Do I have to dress as a woman? Let's make it easier for you, all right? You can just...
Yeah. But I'm guessing she would have had to dress as a woman who's dressed as a boy, so it would have been, like, even more ridiculous, you know? I don't think he was just in his normal clothes.
Just to make it funny for the audience? Yeah,
I think
maybe.
So, yeah. And that's fair enough, you know? So Jessica comes in dressed as a boy, and she's going to go with Lorenzo, and he says, oh, you know, it's so good that you're here, my love. Come, you can be my torchbearer. And she's like, oh, all right, then.
Yep. That's basically that scene.
It's yeah, I mean, really Antonio short. Comes in at the very end and talks to Graciano for 10 lines, and that's more or less, that's it. The idea is that they're going to sail away, we learn, at the end of the scene.
Yeah.
And that's that. So we move on to scene 7, and we're back with Portia in Morocco, and we pick up where we left off, and we can skip over this because we did talk about it a lot already, but Morocco, obviously he's a... You know, he's a prince. He looks at this and says, well, I want the gold's going to give me all that men want. Surely that's Portia. I'm going to pick the gold. Oh, no, it's not the gold. Off I go. And she says, you know, a gentle riddance. Let all of his complexion, let all of his complexion choose so. So she doesn't want him.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that you were kind of interested. Like you said at one point, oh, I'd love to be Morocco. And sure, he sounds like a good-looking guy, but also he sounds kind of like Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Like no, the way he would like go hunting and like fight and things like that.
Well, it's only because we joked that we would take one of the three suitors each. And I said, well, in that case, I'll be Morocco because I feel like, you know, why not? I don't necessarily need to be the guy that picks the right answer. I'm happy to just be the first guy who walks in and says, you know, I like nice gold things, you know, and then that's his own undoing.
Yeah.
That's fine. So let's wrap up the act. So we've got two quick scenes left. Scene 8, it's a brief conversation with Solario and Solanio talking about how Shylock is sad because his daughter has left him. She's run off with Lorenzo. She has stolen like a lot of his money as well, which is not kind. And they joke that he's running around saying, oh, my ducats, oh, my daughter. And, you know, he's in distress, kind of in the street, and he's becoming a bit of a laughingstock, really. But I get the impression that they're trying to say he cares more about the ducats than the daughter. But.
Yes, yes.
So that's sad, but, you know, there we go. Scene 9.
Well, we kind of skipped one small thing. Okay. They hear of a ship crashing. Let that be foreshadowing for future scenes.
Sure, of course.
Yes.
And scene 9, we wrap up the act back with Portia, and the second suitor has arrived, and that's the Prince of Aragon. And he chooses the silver, right? So, yeah, he doesn't get it either. The silver is all that, not all the men want, but kind of all that he deserves and no more. And he thinks, well, what an arrogant thing. He's like, well, I deserve Portia. So it's almost worse than picking the gold.
But his way of thinking isn't arrogant at all in saying, like, a man shouldn't get more than he deserves. So I will take only what I deserve.
Yeah, to be fair, he's trying to say, I'm not going to take the gold. I'm not going to take all that men want. I'll just take what I deserve. But then you can look at it that way, too. I just thought, well
that's the way he looked at it. But yeah, obviously, like, he is then saying he deserves Portia. But he deserves to be a fool, apparently.
Yeah.
Leaving with two fool's heads.
So then a messenger enters at the end of the act and tells Portia that essentially she has visitors.
Yeah.
And that's where we end. At this point, I think the acts do get a little bit quicker. That act 2 had a lot kind of going on in it. So act 3, scene 1, we're back in Venice with... Dumb and Dumber over here, Solanio and Solario. I just don't care about these chaps.
Oh, no.
Just so irrelevant. So these are the guys who were previously, you know, making fun of Shylock and now enter Shylock. So we kind of pick up with them where we left off. Shylock comes in.
We hear two more ships crashing.
Yeah, more ships have crashed. Yeah. At this point, we do meet Tuval for the first time. I mean, he doesn't really do a lot. He's just kind of Shylock's other Jewish friend. And he's been looking for Jessica. That's really all. That's his entire kind of role in the play. Shylock sends him out to look for his daughter.
But this is the scene that really makes me like be on Shylock's side throughout all this. Like, he has a great monologue in this, and I'm not going to read it all. But talking about Antonio, he hath disgraced me and hindered me 500,000. Laughed at my losses, mocked at my gains, scorned my nation, thwarted my bargains, cooled my friends, heated mine enemies. And what's his reason? I'm a Jew. Hath not a Jew eyes? Hath not a Jew hands, organs, dimensions, senses, affections, passions? Like, he keeps going on and just saying, like, yeah, if you prick us, do we not bleed? Like,
famous line.
Really making you feel for this guy. Like, really, you're just hating on me because I'm Jewish?
This is the scene that made me wonder if Shakespeare wanted us to sympathize with him. Because why does he give him this lovely monologue then if he, you know, if it is just an anti-Semitic play? Like, is he trying to raise some awareness in the consciousness of the viewers?
It's bizarre that it's such an anti-Semitic play and then you can just take this lovely piece and take it out of context and still recite it today.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I don't know. I can't agree with it, or I don't understand it.
You understand why he wants to get back at Antonio. It sounds like it cost him, like, yeah, 500,000 ducats. Also, just being tortured all the time for being... Just in this situation he's in, if he has to live in a ghetto, it turns out, like, there would be guards for this ghetto, which the Jewish people would have to pay to guard them in their own ghetto. And, yeah... I can imagine snapping.
Oh yeah, like let's be honest here. You're perfectly right to say this is the scene where we because at the minute we're thinking up to this point, they're a bit mean to Shylock because he's a Jew, but people are telling us he is mean. So, like, although I do sympathize with him a little bit, I was kind of trying to reserve judgment to see how it went. And then in this scene, you're just like, oh, poor Shylock, I want to give him a hug. You
know? Yeah, and I can understand why he's angry at his daughter. Like, imagine your own child, and I think Robert's the only one who has one here who can talk about this, but your own child stealing a lot of money from you, even like stealing the dead wife's wedding ring.
Yeah.
Like you would probably be pretty angry at your child for this. You'd be happy that they're okay, but
at this point, I'm not sure if you would be.
What was that, Robert?
No, have we gotten to the part where she sells the ring for the monkey?
I think you mentioned that soon, maybe in the next scene. But yeah, she sells the ring for the monkey. We do find out as well.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and I do just really feel for Shylock. The only underlying theme is that he speaks of revenge, which isn't a very Christian concept.
Well, he's Jewish, though.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the only
part. But it's also not very... Well, maybe. That's look at the Old Testament. So,
yeah, let's not talk about that too much. But
yeah, I don't have...
The whole if they prick us, do we not bleed thing. I feel really, really a lot for Shylock in this scene. And he's right. Look, let's not forget, this is a chap. So we're going to start with Antonio. This is a chap who is, and later admits that he's, always cruel to Shylock, really for no reason. You know, I think he spits on him and kicks him in the street and calls him names and all this kind of stuff. He's really horrible to him. Now he's coming in with his tail between his legs and saying, I've been an ass, but will you lend me a massive amount of money? And then one of his friends, like it is, Lorenzo is one of Antonio's gang, who then also steals away Shylock's daughter in the middle of the night and a lot of his money with it and his wife's ring and all the rest of it. So this guy, like, I'm surprised he doesn't just go in with a bat and start wrecking people, you know? Like, I really understand why he's so annoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean... There are things he says as well, like he'd rather his daughter come back dead with the money and stuff. So he is still stuck on the money. And
yeah,
that's where you can't really defend Shylock anymore.
But I don't know.
Even though I will defend him through the rest of the play. Yeah.
I get what you're saying. That sounds mean. But what I tried to hint at a few moments ago is, would you want your daughter back safely? And sure, in a modern context, we would probably say yes.
Let's ask Robert.
No, we're not going to do that. Yeah. In a modern context, we would say yes, obviously we do. But I feel like we see our children differently than they would have done back then, right? And I feel like children were dying with the infant mortality rates and everything. Like, I don't think they had that same, not saying that no one had that same kind of connection, but I understand someone in that time frame saying, she robbed me, so kind of screw her, I just want the money back, you know?
Yeah, I guess if you can just, like, have a ton of kids, like, yeah, what's one?
Yeah, they're all replaceable, essentially.
Oh, God. Yeah, I was very reluctant to make Robert talk about how he put himself in Shylock's position here. Let's move on. So we've got scene two. We're back with Portia, and she does have visitors. It's, of course, Bassanio and Graciano, and they're all having a wee chat in Belmont. So, I mean, this scene is interesting because... Portia and Bassanio are in love, right? So we confirm that here. Is Bassanio a bit poncy? I mean, at one point here, he has like a 40-line monologue.
Well, talking about which one to choose, which box?
Before they choose, right before he opens the casket, he does his big monologue about it and talks about a lot of different things. I don't know, maybe that's fine. It's just like, well, considering the last act, there were scenes that were shorter than this. And this guy, he's prattling on a bit, you know. I just thought he's a wee bit poncy. But obviously he chooses the leaden casket, right? He's the hero in this kind of fairy tale scene, and he chooses the right casket. He wants to give all he has to Portia. But does he? I think he wants to give all Antonio has. Because in order to visit Portia, he's had to... So that we should clarify, in case it's not explicit, the reason Antonio is borrowing this money is not for himself. he is trying to be a good fellow, and he's lending them. He's helping Bassanio. He's paying for Bassanio to visit Portia and find his love. Antonio's getting nothing from this, and he doesn't want to go to Shylock and with his tail between his legs. He's doing it for a friend. So we do like that aspect of Antonio.
Great friends.
But it's easy for Bassanio to be like, "Yeah, I'll choose the lead. I'll risk all of my friend's fortune."
I suppose in one way you could look at that as the true fortune is the friendship he has with Antonio.
Aww.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're not going to beat that. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
So
they get married. Graziano gets to marry Nerissa. Lorenzo arrives with Jessica. But then we also hear from Antonio at the end of the scene from a letter saying, like, yeah, all those ships that have been crashing have been Antonio's, and he has no money now and cannot pay back Shylock. We hear that Shylock is pushing for revenge. Big surprise. But Portia says, don't worry, we'll give him 6,000 ducats to not hurt Antonio.
Yeah. Well, then she says, give him six. And then she also then says, pay him six, double the six, then treble that. So, because they say at this point, Shylock is saying that he just wants revenge. He wouldn't even accept 20 times the bond. She basically offers 20 times the bond. So she's like, well, you say he wouldn't, but let's find out, you know, let's see if he will.
And what an amazing thing. Like, okay, so Portia really likes Bassanio, but she's like, okay, I just met this guy today. I'm going to give him, like, I don't know, $100 million? I don't know how much it would be. I'm not going to do the math. No, sorry, 60 million.
That was good math.
Yeah, it was easy. Imagine giving 60 million to someone you just met.
She is clear that they have to marry real quick.
Yeah. But I don't think she's offering 20 times, to be honest. I think that she was offering maybe like 5 or 6.
Well, I don't know, because we talk about instead of 3,000 ducats, she says pay him 6,000, double 6,000, then treble that. So I don't know, but like, I guess it doesn't matter. Really, the main point is she's gonna offer more than the bond to try to get Antonio, you know, to save his life.
Still a few million, yeah.
Yeah, it's still a lot of money, however we look at it. Even the value of the bond was a lot of money. What do we think, real quick, before we move on, what do we think about the fact that Portia and Bassanio get together, and then just kind of in a throwaway couple of lines, they're like, oh yeah, and also our friends are in love. It's like, well, while you were doing that, Graziano and Nerissa, who just met, they're going to get married too. It's like, well, that's a bit convenient.
It's a comedy.
Yeah, it is what it is. So we move on to scene 3. It's a brief scene, just because that, you know, we just have a long scene of 300 odd lines. So we have a very quick, you know, 30 line entr'acte, essentially. Shylock is there with Solanio and Antonio and a jailer, because Shylock, the idea is that Antonio should be in prison for defaulting on the bond. And obviously Shylock wants his pint of flesh. And this is where we really see these famous, you know, I will have my bond, speak not against my bond. And no matter what they say, I pray thee hear me speak. I'll have my bond, I'll not hear ye speak. This is what I remember from reading this when I was 13. You know, just he's obsessed with his bond. That's all he talks about. I will have my bond.
Mm.
Again, through the fact that they screwed him over, you know, but... This is where I start to lose a little bit of sympathy for him, though, because like, he won't even hear the guy out. He won't listen to alternative options. He just wants revenge at this point. He wants the pint of flesh, and he essentially wants to kill Antonio.
Yeah, yeah.
So scene 4, we've got Lorenzo and Portia, and the others are around there, including the servant Balthazar, who I don't even know why he's named, because this is, I think, the first time he's done anything in the play. Basically, Portia sends him off to fetch Dr. Bellario. The idea, I guess he's going to look for some ships and they're going to consult the doctor. The idea is that Portia's hatching this plan with more dressing up in boys' clothes is going to be involved soon. And they're going to help, essentially. So let's set off. And they just say to Lorenzo, you know, we don't really know you. I just met this guy. I've married him and given him all my money. You're just his mate. Just take the house. You can just look after everything while we're done.
Take care of it. You'll be fine.
And they're like, okay, I mean, I don't know who Lorenzo is, but yeah, sure. You just live in this lovely house now for a while.
She says she's going to go to like the convent or nunnery or whatever.
Yeah, but this is weird. Because obviously she doesn't, but...
Yeah, but ends up going to court, which is in two scenes.
Yeah, but for me, this is weird. What is Lorenzo thinking? She's like, you know, I know I've been living here with my maid all this time, but now that I've married a guy 10 minutes ago and he's gone, I guess I'll just go wait in a convent. You can take my house. He's like, what is going on?
I don't know. I think he's just thinking about Jessica at this point. A house to myself and Jessica? We're going to have fun.
Yeah, right? It's like, because we think that Porsche is rich, essentially. That's the idea I have. So he's thinking, grand, we get to stay in this grand house. And, you know, I'm here. I've got Jessica. Sure. I'll go along with this weird plan.
Yeah. It doesn't work out well for Lorenzo later on, but I don't know if you caught that as much.
I know. You'll have to fill us in on that because that surprises
me. Once they come back to the house, Lorenzo and Jessica are not having a good time, it sounds like.
Okay. Well, I think that's coming up very soon, so we'll get there.
Yeah.
Act three. Go ahead.
Five. Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, act three, scene five.
Yeah, so, it's right now then.
It's Lancelot again. Basically his scene talking. I mean, is there really anything that happens? He just says like, oh, Jessica's not going to go to heaven. She's Jewish, but now she's also going to increase the price of pork because she's now Christian.
I thought that was just a joke. You know, it's Lancelot saying a lot of it.
I don't know. Like really not much happens in it. He got a servant pregnant. There you go.
Yeah, this scene I think you could have cut, but we do hear that somehow they mention Lancelot. So what is Lancelot's life? Like he's living with a Jew, he just decides to leave and go to this other guy. Now he's at Portia's house. I don't really know why, just because Bassanio's there, I guess. Like he's just...
Yeah.
Why is he like, there?
He's a terrible servant. He's not doing anything to
he's
serve.
He's doing nothing. He's just got a girl pregnant. What is his purpose?
This is why I said like Shylock was happy for him to leave. Like, he was useless. Yeah. I believe Shylock for half of this.
I guess so. So...
The most important scene now.
I think, yeah. I mean, the last two acts are really... Well, I was going to say they're one scene each. Technically, there's a very, very brief scene two in act four, but these are two long acts that are really just one main scene. So let's get to act four. Scene one... Enter the Duke of Venice. So it's the usual, you know, we always have these kind of dukes come in to kind of give a ruling or whatever. It's not quite a deus ex machina, but Shakespeare does like to use the dukes in this kind of way. They're the ruler of the city, you defer to them, you've got to figure things out, I guess.
But in this case, the duke can't really do anything legally because, well, there's a contract.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder, like, could he have done something? I'm assuming that he's making the laws. Like, I do wonder if he could have acted.
No, what he could have done is he could have put Angelo in charge and blame Angelo.
And then sneak back in disguise later, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what he could have done. Yeah. So... I mean, I guess like, let's summarize this scene quickly. All they really do at this point is the Duke is kind of saying, there's not a lot I can do because of the contract. They kind of say to Shylock, you know, go on and be a good lad. And he's like, no, I'm not gonna be a good lad. I want my bond. And that's
I mean, it also sounds like his argument is also pretty strong here in that he's saying, you guys also have slaves. Your slaves are asking to be let go. And you're not letting them go, I'm still taking my bonds then. Like
that's a like, good argument.
It's like, all right, you guys are also not good people.
yeah, again, it's where you really, really resonate or you feel for Shylock because that does go back as far as Passover as well. The whole
let my people go.
Let my people go. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I take his argument here. Go ahead, Robert. Sorry, finish off.
No. Go on.
I was going to say, I take his argument because he's essentially saying, you own whole people. You own slaves. I own £1 of this man. So how is that different? If anything, it's less bad. You know, like he's like, you own entire people. You're not giving them up. Why should I? And that is, you know, functioning logic.
And I don't know about the laws of Venice, but I did look up the laws for Elizabethan times. And if you steal 5 pence from someone, you are allowed to be hanged.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, there we go.
And so 3,000 ducats, I believe, would probably be more than 5p. So I can see why he would be okay with this guy dying. So in this case, like, even if he doesn't take his pound of flesh, he could say, all right, kill this guy. He stole money from me.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, all the while, the Duke is friendly but ineffective. He can't really do anything, or he won't. And, you know, depends how you want to look at that. He says, yeah, there's not a lot I can do other than ask you to be nice. You've said no. I've done my duty. But I will stand by and let Portia do all this meddling in a minute, because I kind of hope things work out for the best. The Duke is very ineffective.
Meddling is a good word. It's kind of that 12 angry men logic that isn't really that sound, but works for what they're trying to say.
It works in the play, I think. Yeah,
it works in the play.
You can sit and analyze it, but I think it does what it's meant to do, you know. So yeah. Portia comes in and they say the doctor couldn't make it, the doctor of laws, but here comes, like, he's not quite apprentice, but like his friend, or his, you know, kind of journeyman, a younger lawyer essentially. And they share the same opinion, so in comes Portia. And the idea is that she does this big speech where she's not going to convince Shiloh to change his mind per se, but she's going to make it so that he can't do what he wants effectively. He can't get the pound of flesh. And the most famous reason behind that is, well, you can take the pound of flesh, but you're not allowed to spill one jot of blood. Now, I think that she does give him a chance. Like she says, like, if we pay the money, can he go? And Shiloh says, no. That, you know, I just want what's in the bond. And they offer some alternatives, and he says, well, that's not in the bond. All I will have is exactly what's in the bond. And she says, okay, I mean, those are your words, and if that's all you want, there's no blood in the bond. And he's like, oh, no. But she draws him in nicely, I think. You know, she kind of traps him with his own logic, because he refuses any alternative based on the fact that he's going by the letter of the law on this bond. And if he had maybe just been a little bit nicer, he would have been able to accept a lot more money than he was originally offered and gotten away scot-free. And he says, no, I want the bond.
Yeah, I finally get my revenge.
But all the bond says is that Antonio has to pay him. Surely if she offers the money for Antonio, like, surely that is in line with the bond.
Yeah, but with failing to pay it back, it wasn't going to be with interest. That's the whole point. He said, instead of interest, it's going to be a pound of flesh.
Okay.
Yeah. So he does, there is that part. Yeah. But what she says as well, like, you can't cut more than a pound or less. Like, I don't know why he can't do less than a pound.
Yeah, then do some extra shavings to make it up.
Just do some extra shavings and then you just get it there. Then if he goes over, okay, then you hurt him.
Yeah. I don't really know, to be honest.
Yeah.
So at this point, and then this is where I really lose empathy for Shiloh. He realizes that he's not going to get what he wants. So I lose empathy, then I regain it very quickly. Because he then says, well, okay, if I can't have that, forget all the things I just said. Forget the letter of the law. Forget the bond. You just pay me triple the amount and I'll go. And then Portia's kind of like, well, we've got him on the ropes here. Why would we pay you triple?
I mean, even says, just pay me back my money.
Now he says, then just give me the principal. Just give me the money once. And then they kind of say, again, no. Because it's now transpired, and I don't know why the Duke didn't know this, but it is illegal for Shylock to be coveting the life of a citizen, right? To be trying to do something that would cause a citizen to die, which this action would have done.
I mean, this also is like, well, this guy stole from me, hang him. Like, I feel like that would be totally okay. It's only when it's a Jewish man here who is trying to, like, do it himself instead of getting a Christian executioner. Like, it doesn't work for me.
I mean, yeah, I just kind of took it that if it was illegal for him to do something that would cause Antonio to die, why no one mentioned that already? But, you know, basically what happens next is we have another famous line from Gratiano: beg that thou mayst have leave to hang thyself. Because this is where they say, essentially, we're going to take all your property. We're going to leave you with nothing. The Duke can decide whether you're even allowed to live or die. And this is really cruel from Gratiano. He says, you know, you should have leave to hang yourself. And he says, well, actually, all your wealth is forfeit to the state, so you can't even afford to hang yourself. I guess the state will have to pay for the rope. That's a bit of a slap in the face.
Yeah. And even the compromise here, which isn't even a compromise, they take half of his money and he's forced to become Christian.
Yeah. So at this point, because he was so mean and so, I'm not going to compromise on anything, when they say, well, we're going to let you live, the Duke says you can live, but we will take some of your money, only to really give, the idea is that he would leave half of his money to his daughter as well. So I'm thinking, okay, they're trying to be That's nice. Right. He's getting a bit of punishment, but he is being allowed to live and they're going to look after his daughter.
The will has to go to Lorenzo and Jessica, basically. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, they're probably doing a lot. They could have done a lot worse. They could have said, they'll kill him and take all his money. But now they then say, oh yeah, but you've got to convert to be a Christian. And I'm like, that's a bit much. You can't really make him do that. Now, to be fair, he could just tell him he's done it. And, you know, you don't know what's going on inside a person's mind, you know, but still, it's still a wee bit much.
Yeah.
So that's where I gave sympathy back for Shylock.
Great input, Robert.
I'm sorry. I'm sat here just grimacing at the entire exchange. I really like Shylock.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's not the best guy, but he's getting the short end of the stick throughout all of this.
Yeah, he is. And I think he makes some mistakes, and I think he's too vengeful and he's too obsessed with the money. And I think that there's a few problems, but he also gets the short end of the stick a lot. And I really do empathize with him in a lot of.
That's why things. I was really happy to see in the fanfic, like the one that came out in the 1920s, the sequel, he does very well because he still had some money and was Christian. So people weren't prejudiced against him. So he was able to make even more money.
Yeah, let's be under no illusions here, though, because like this is a play that gets studied further down. It's not A-level, but it gets studied sometimes in schools around Key Stage 3 and GCSE. Let's be honest here. We're not really meant to like Shylock. Like, we do because, you know, we're good modern people. But apart from that
Portia that we don't like.
I do like Portia until the end. Up until this point, I have really liked her.
Sorry, even for the entire court case, she's masquerading as the doctor. So she's already lied about her qualifications.
I thought she was masquerading as a lawyer.
It's a doctor of law, so it's...
Oh, okay.
They refer to her as the doctor. But, I mean, the entire thing, she could have just said, hey, you know, here's the plan, guys, and let everybody else in on this particular...
Imagine this case happening today, though. Like, she comes in and says, oh, I'm a doctor of law. I have this... This wouldn't
like what is that called? Forgery? What is that? That's an actually illegal.
That is incredibly illegal, and this case would be thrown out immediately.
Yeah, but the idea is that she's doing it to help her friend.
Or she could have helped her friend in a much nicer way. All right, this is weird. The entire play has been weird up to this point. Right. It's just I find the entire Catholic cast horrible.
Right. Okay.
They're all just anyway.
So, what I'm going to say is going to seem strange in 2 minutes when we review the final act, and I then hate Portia. But at this point, up to this point, I really like her. I think she's initially depicted as a paragon of virtue with a bunch of horrible, lecherous men who don't really like her trying to get with her. She now says, I've never even met Antonio. I'm going to risk my money and everything. I'm going to go help him, like because he's a friend of my husband's. I think she's a great, great girl. And she does this scene where she dresses the doctor. Sure, is it would this hold up in court? Obviously not. But I'm like, well, you know, it's a play. We get a little certain amount of license. She's doing this to try to help Antonio. Maybe it's the only way that she... Now, could she have just come in and said, you can't spill a drop of blood as Portia and not disguise herself as a boy? Maybe. Would they have listened to a girl? Maybe not. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go along with what she's doing up until this point. But she does lose me in about 30 seconds.
Well, no, there's also, because we've talked about this beforehand, there is a line between Antonio and, I'm awful with names, sorry, who's your man?
Bassanio.
There is a line that Bassanio exchanges with Antonio where, I can't remember exactly what the line is, but the essence of it is bros before a hose. You know, if I could exchange everything, undo everything, I would undo the marriage.
And you hear Portia respond. And then yes. Gratiano says the same thing, like, oh, if I could send Nerissa up to heaven to talk to God. And it's like, you would kill your wife?
There is a little bit of, you know, I know we talked about this beforehand, but I do kind of understand everything that happens in the final act because of this exchange. And as well as that, the exchange of the rings. The doctor asks Bassanio for the ring, and he gives it to her.
Yes, so that's what happens at the end of this scene and for the duration of the next scene, which is only 15 lines. Now,
it does take some pushing to get it. It does take until Act 4, Scene 2 for him to actually send it over, because he was told, like, hold on to this, do not give it up no matter what, so like, die before this happens.
Here's my take. First of all, we shouldn't put so much stock in material things. But secondly, I understand...
Oh, for goodness sake, it's not a material. It's not about the ring. It's about the oath he took when he was handed the ring.
And I think that's a very unfair thing for someone to ask their partner to do. But we'll get to that. So initially, yes, there was the ring given, and Bassanio was really reluctant to give it up. This is Portia, who knows that she gave him the ring, who knows that she said it's a token of her love, it is the symbolism, I agree with you, and you should never give this up for any reason. I'm going to dress up and I'm going to help your friend. Good. All good so far. Then I'm going to, for no reason, cause you deliberate mental anguish and torture as the person I'm supposed to love by asking you for the ring in disguise and say it's the only thing I will accept. She's now this guy's thinking, oh my God, this doctor has just saved my friend's life, but I'm not meant to give away the ring. What do I do? He does say no. And then Antonio's like, what are you doing? She just saved my life. Go after her. Give her the ring. And he's like, okay, that is persuasive. And scene two is where he runs up and gives her the ring. Or he sends Graciano to do it for him. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, and I think that any partner, male or female, would be able to say, okay, you weren't meant to give the token away, but someone literally just saved your life, your friend's life. Which I was in favor of anyway. I offered him all the money. I have the same motivations as you. I wanted to help your friend. We get another ring. You know, like, we still love each other. Who would lose a human life over a stupid ring, a stupid piece of materialism? You know, I understand there's symbolism involved, but I think Portia is really horrible here.
No, I think she's been scorned and she's well within her rights.
I think she's testing him, and that's not healthy for any relationship at all. But on those AITA posts on Reddit, I remember seeing one of a woman who ended up getting a fake phone number, messaging her husband, and trying to basically, like, catfish him in a way.
Yeah.
I tried to get him to cheat. He didn't. And then she got angry at him for not bringing it up with her later that night. And it seems like the same idea. Like,
also, even though he didn't cheat, he still didn't bring it up. So she still got angry anyway. So she just wanted to get angry with him, basically.
Basically, yeah. And I feel like that's kind of what Portia's doing. Sure, like, he said something really crappy to her. But to really, like, talk to him about it, don't test him. And then, like, make it, then say, like, oh yeah, I slept with this guy as well. Like, that's Act 5, Scene 1.
That's getting into Act 5 now, yeah. But I think we're more or less in agreement here, Alex, which I thought I was
I do actually agree, I mean, sure, the ring has meaning. He shouldn't have given it up no matter what. He should have just said, hey, thanks. Like, she was just going to walk away.
She was, but then Antonio persuades him, and maybe he's a bit weak-willed there, but, he, you know, it's his friend, he's happy, he's alive. I understand, I'm trying to put myself in his shoes.
Antonio makes a mistake. Portia caused the mistake in the first place, and then keeps it going. So
I think it's never healthy to be deliberately testing someone in a relationship like this. You know, I don't think that's what people should be doing. And you know, again, this is a modern interpretation. At the time, they would have just thought, oh, that's a bit of crack. You know, it's funny. You know, let's cause him a bit of distress.
I mean, they already had that with Gobo, right?
Yeah, exactly. Similar idea. Portia loses me here, and I really, really don't like her in this final act. Like, I just, I don't know. I really loved her up until this point. I had no prejudice against her. But this doesn't work for me. As you say, this idea of the testing, she's causing this in the first place. He does do the right thing. I think that anyone would say, I really didn't want you to give that ring away, but it's literally been a matter of life and death. Like, if I'd given someone a token, no matter how important the symbolism was, it's literally a matter of my friend's life and death. I would like to think they would give it up. We can find another token. We're also.
But it wasn't a matter of life and death. His life was secured already. There was no purpose beyond
gratitude. It was gratitude for life and death.
Gratitude itself is a symbol. So she's already placed the symbolism of gratitude above the symbolism of the ring to his oath.
Herself. Well, you would think it was different then if they'd said, I'm only going to save him if you give the ring, because then it wouldn't be gratitude. Then
I would say
for me, those are the same. It's difference. Still been a matter of life and death whether you give the ring before or after. Gratitude is just as much a motivation as doing it to help yourself, because it's actually better. It's a more virtuous thing to thank someone than to only give them something because you need it beforehand.
But what was the chest? The iron chest had the words, he must risk and hazard all.
That's a very, very fair point. But don't forget, Portia is the one who's offering all this money to help Antonio anyway. She's on board.
Yeah. I feel like for instigating this, like if it were someone else completely, if it were not her who asked for the ring and it was just a different doctor or lawyer or whoever, I think then that this would be so much better.
It would. It would. And in parallel, Nerissa and Graciano have the exact same story. He gives the ring as well, because she's the clerk for the doctor, and she took notes, and he says, well, I'll give you a ring too. A little bit less motivation on that one, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
We don't care about them as much.
So on to Act 5, Scene 1. Yeah, so I was talking why Lorenzo and Jessica aren't going to work, probably, or at least they're fighting quite a bit. So they're using some pretty terrible analogies here, or like references. So Lorenzo is talking about Troilus and Cressida, not a great relationship. Then Jessica says, in such a night did Thisbe fearfully o'ertrip the dew and saw the lion shadow air himself and Ray dismayed away. In the original, she did not run away. And it kind of comes, like they talk about Dido, Medea, and Jessica then says, did young Lorenzo swear he loved her well, stealing her soul with many vows of faith and ne'er a true one? So just saying like, yeah, you lied to me throughout this entire thing. Mm-hmm. Like they're fighting. And then Lorenzo says, in such a night did pretty Jessica, like a little shrew, slander her love and forgave it her. Now he does forgive her, but still saying these terrible things about each other.
So we're not sure that these relationships are going to work out.
Yeah. She says, I would outknight you, but did nobody come? But hark, I hear footing a man. So they keep fighting, but they hear someone coming.
Yeah. Final thoughts on Portia for me is going to be to wrap up her story. She continues the ruse. You mentioned, you hinted at it a moment ago. She then talks about the fact that she slept with the doctor. Now, obviously, she was the doctor in disguise. It's all a ruse. But she's now causing additional mental anguish to poor Bassanio and saying, well, I basically cheated on you. And she says, you better watch over me, because anytime you leave, I'm going to be sleeping with the doctor again. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, what is your reason for causing him all this distress? And honestly, it's only in the last 20... There's a 300-line scene. It's only in the last 20 lines or so, maybe 20, 25 lines, that she does the reveal. Like, I was starting to think she wasn't going to do the reveal. I thought she was going to leave them in distress.
Yeah, I mean, she says, like, she slept with these people to get the rings back, but she was wronged by him, and I get that, but she goes overboard, and then they say, oh, they're all going to be happy now.
Yeah, I mean, we assume everything's okay for Graciano and Nerissa as well, because they are just a parallel. They are just a copy and paste story of Bassanio and Portia.
It is, yeah. Basically, you could just say, and then Graciano and Nerissa did the same thing.
The same thing. Now, Robert, you said perfectly right there. Let's be honest. Now, be honest with me here. Even though you think you're more sympathetic to Portia here and you think she was more within her rights to do this, you still surely think she should have done the reveal at the end. You don't think she should leave him his whole life still thinking that he'd messed up about the ring and that she was going to sleep with the doctor every time he went away.
Oh, that's the only reason I can agree with Portia and be on Portia's side is because it was all a joke, essentially.
Yeah.
There was a reveal. There was a bit of a teasing, poking, whatever. That's how I view it.
Maybe if it had been a quick tease, you know, maybe. If it had been a 2-minute thing and then like, oh, I'm only joking. But she drags it on just quite a bit and I just feel like this is not good for his mental health.
And that is a Shakespearean thing to do as well.
You know, I said it really accurately earlier on as well. You know, I think the entire Christian cast is just terrible. They're all terrible people. They're all doing terrible things. And yeah, I understand Portia's motivation. I understand that. I don't fully disagree with it, but it's also like, it's not nice. It is horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you didn't like Portia before, so you actually like her more in this scene because she's doing a joke. Whereas I liked her before.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here and, you know, I like Portia at all by any measure. It's just I get that this is within her character. This makes sense. And I don't sympathize with Bassanio or Antonio in this situation. I don't sympathize with any of them. They all deserve each other, essentially.
I think it can also be directed in a nicer way as well to make it seem more joking. But yeah, overall thoughts for this, though, I like it still. I'd still give it an A. Like, we're talking about all these different parts that we hate, all these like bad people, but I think there's so much to discuss about it. Like the love story, I think, is very sweet, especially in like Acts 1, 2, and 3. Shylock makes for a very interesting antagonist in this. I'm not going to say villain, but he definitely is an antagonist.
Good distinction. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's fair.
You could argue that Antonio is an antagonist as well, but if you want to see Shylock as the good guy.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. We all like the play. We went way over time here. We talked about it a lot. The only other time we've done that was Othello, and I think that those are two that are of my favorites now, so I totally get it. I would say that there's a way to produce and direct this play, A, to make Shylock a lot more, take away a little bit more of the anti-Semitism, make him a bit more sympathetic, and B, to maybe tone down my hatred of Portia in that final scene. There might be a way to do that, and then it would be a perfect play, you know.
Yeah, the directing can make it funnier and generally better.
Yeah, so I mean, final thoughts, I guess. Final thoughts. We all liked it, I guess. More.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite plays, Bill. Despite the cast.
Everything we said today.
Yeah, look, I think that's fair. We should clarify, though, for anyone that is like studying or anything, we don't really think that Shakespeare intended to have Shylock be sympathetic, other than that one little speech about, you know, if they prick, do I not bleed? And also, I think that scene at the end that we made a lot out of at the time, they would have just thought it was a bit of a joke and moved on and probably not really given it any thought.
Yeah, it's kind of unnecessary in the end anyway.
It is, yeah, he could have dropped it.
Maybe it's not going to be happily ever after for these people. But
it has nothing to do with Shylock or Antonio, really. Like, it could have been just dropped, that last bit.
Yeah, it could have been a 4-act play, but because of the time, it has to be 5 acts, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, anyone want to add anything, or is that us done?
I think that was kind of necessary.
Oh, you think it was?
I think there were certain things that needed to be resolved.
Okay.
They had to wrap it up, but I don't think they needed to do the ring part or like even go back to the house, I feel.
Yeah, you would have had to cut Act 4 short and drop Act 5, because Act 5 resolves Act 4. But yeah, you could have dropped that whole plot point in theory and just wrapped it up with Antonio and Shylock, you know.
Yeah. As long as Antonio didn't say, or Bassanio didn't say the horrible things in the court.
Yes. Oh, don't get me wrong, because I didn't clarify this. I don't like when they say, sure, it's all right if our wives die. Like, I did not like that, okay? Because I didn't stress that. But that did lose me a little bit. but I just think the way they went about resolving it was a bit mean. But there we go.
I suppose it was the only way you could really resolve it while they remained together, I guess. Because the healthiest thing would be like, oh, you want to murder me to save your friend. I don't think this is a healthy relationship.
So last question, and Alex, I'm going to ask this one to yourself. How do you classify this play? I don't really feel that it's a comedy or a tragedy.
It would definitely be a comedy to me. Yeah,
think so?
Like, it still ends with marriages. There's not, especially the way it was meant to be written, or meant to be read, I guess, like, there isn't really a tragic element to it. Nobody dies, right?
No one dies, you're right. And it does have some of those comic tropes and the clown and everything else all in there. But just like the way we would read it nowadays, first of all, we had that debate about Portia at the end, but more importantly, the thing that everyone pick up on is the treatment of Shylock. It's very hard to see that as being funny now. I think a lot of people would have, would read that now and find a lot of those things quite sad. And that big moving dialogue he gives, like, maybe it's a little bit of a tragic comedy, but you're right. No one dies. Shylock nearly does. So
yeah. Whereas I would call it a problematic play. I would not identify it as a problem play within Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. Well, I think that's us done. If anyone's made it to the end, thanks for listening. And that's us. Are we doing another? We didn't talk about this. Are we done? Is Shakespeare finished?
We might try out some others, but stay posted.
All right. Have a Shakespearean day.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.